You are listening to Space Boy Universe. Here are your hosts, Space Boy and Sir Lana.
Originally from San Francisco, Russ grew up in both Japan and the United States, garnering an international viewpoint of the world throughout his childhood. After graduating from the University of Southern California with degrees in cinema, television, international relations, and Japanese, he founded Russum Productions in 2002 in order to promote his short films, including Her Night, the award-winning Girl with a Gun, and the documentary Restoration of Paradise. He has also produced several shorts, including Mavet, the zombie flick The Diary, the vampire film Perfect Red, as well as Cult 11 and The Meeting, two popular web series. His latest feature film, Occupants, has won an official selection at the San Diego Comic-Con and was highlighted in the Huffington Post and marked Russ's fourth foray into feature filmmaking after having directed PJ, Chasing the Green, Legend of the Thaya. He currently resides in Huntington Beach. Please welcome Russ Emanuel. Welcome, sir.
Hey, how you doing? Thank you for having me on.
Yes, well, it's great to have you.
Yes, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for making some time for us. And I know time's of the essence for you, so I'm going to get right to the most important question that we've got burning. So first and foremost, can you please tell us about your love of Robert Picardo?
Bob is great. I meant
no, that's why I want to know how you got to find to know him and why you seem to revere him. He's in many of your productions, which I think is awesome.
Thank you. Through Howard Nash, my producer. I'm very indebted to him. Howard he's produced all my feature films, including Occupants. And we're doing a new project with Picardo called The Assassin's Apprentice, which I'm directing in early December. So, my first time I met Bob was 2006. And he was on board Howard's project called PJ, which also had John Hurd, the Home Alone dad, and Vincent Pastore, among many, many great actors. And, I was, 29 at that time? Never directed a feature, never directed name actors. It was very nervous, very nerve-wracking. it seems that the rapport has built over the years. So we did that film, we did Chasing the Green, which had Ryan Hurst and Jeremy London and Bill Devane. We did The Legends of Nathaya, you mentioned, and that was him in a starring role. It was kind of like a Princess Bride type fantasy story. And then we did Occupants. Oh, we also did a documentary called Restoration of Paradise, which is about the Bolsa Chica wetlands here in Huntington Beach, California. And the reason I mentioned that is he actually mentions an award-winning documentary in the film Occupants. And it's funny because it's an in-joke because he narrated that documentary.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah. And he's a really fun guy. He has some great ideas, great suggestions. He loves to mentor the younger actors. Mm-hmm. Like on Occupants, we had Brianna White, who was superb as Annie Curtis and her parallel self, and Michael Pugliese, who played Neil and parallel Neil Curtis. And so, he gives advice. He likes working with the actors, like, 30 minutes to an hour prior to when we shoot, and then go over the lines. And, I'm very malleable as a director, so what I want is the most natural performance. So when he says, in the film, he said tendrils of fear is something that he came up with, specifically those words, tendrils of fear. And, it was not in the script, but I'm like, well, okay, that works for me. It doesn't veer from the story, and, it brings a more natural performance for him, mm-hmm. and also to the other actors who have to listen and react to him. So I guess in a nutshell, I guess that's why Bob and I have been working together for, all this time. And he was just at the Stan Lee's Los Angeles Comic-Con, where Occupants was playing, and he was on our panel, and I'm very grateful that he showed up for that.
Yeah, Sir Lana is a big fan of his.
I am.
We both love him. I've seen him in bit parts prior to Star Trek Voyager, mm-hmm. but I think there was a season where Sir Lana hadn't seen Star Trek Voyager, and we just kind of sat down and binge-watched that from beginning to end, and she just became enamored with him, and so, yeah.
He and Q are my two favorites out of them, all of it. So, it's my life ambition to at least meet him once, hug the stuffings out of him, and then just run away.
So warn him in advance. So.
Okay. He's been in a lot of Joe Dante films, like Gremlins 2, Inner Space.
Yeah.
He was on an episode of Amazing Stories.
Right.
I don't know if you remember that show.
Yes.
I love that show, by the way.
Yes.
That was produced by Spielberg, and Joe Dante directed that episode. But it was, he was it the gym coach on The Wonder Years?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he was Admiral Woosley on Stargate Atlantis.
Right.
Yeah. He'll be anything in the name that has star in it.
He did the thing with John Candy in the Western where they were going, I think it was it
Wagons
called?
Wagons East or something?
Something like that, yeah.
But
a little curveball out there.
Of course, The Howling.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
This is a veteran actor, you know.
I know he's been around for quite some time out there, and he's done some great acting out there, and great acting, and even on the comedic side.
Yeah. I didn't want to turn this into a Picardo love fest. I'm sorry.
I digress, but I just wanted to just put that out there that Srilana does love the stuffings out of him. So
yeah, I just think that was a great decision on your part to just keep having him in your films. I mean. I would just watch the filmography of everything you have him in. So now I was going to ask you what makes him special, but you just described that. You know, I think he's generous as an actor, very, like you said, giving, he's mentoring, and I think he's fairly fearless when it comes about what he will do and won't do. I mean, that's the impression I get of him. So
yeah, he's he chooses his roles carefully. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm very grateful that he likes the story matters that Howard and I have presented him for, especially this last film, Occupants. It's just, you know, it's been a ride with this film. It's just, you know, it's been at I don't know how many Comic Cons. I'm going to go tonight. I'm leaving tonight in a couple hours to go to Kansas for the Kansas International Film Festival. They're actually flying me out there in my film place tomorrow at 2:40 p.m. local time, their time, in Overland Park. So if anybody's around, I'll be there. Picardo's name, it definitely adds something.
Oh, sure. You know, especially with nerds.
It helps with distribution. We definitely got into a lot of the Comic-Con, but I'm very sure because of this name.
Right.
Very, very sure. So, you know, I mean, I'm very indebted to Bob for sticking with me, sticking with Howard, and just the team. And, you know, I hope he's been enjoying it as much as I have.
I'm sure he has. I'll go ahead and talk about Occupants. Now, that's a horror movie you've got, and the premise of it is really different. I read about it, saw the trailer. I thought it was, you know, I don't watch horror because the circus that's in my unconscious mind is plenty scary, but this, because he's in it, is be something I would definitely be interested in. And it involves what, an alternate dimension?
Yes, that's correct. It's about a young couple named Annie and Neil Curtis, she's a documentarian. Mm-hmm. So they set up cameras all over their house to record their new diet, which is a raw vegan detox diet. And by doing that, they inadvertently capture a parallel version of themselves on the footage. And when they do that, they contact Picardo's character, Dr. Alan Peterson of the Peterson Research Institute. And they ask him for advice as to what to do. So it starts out as found footage, then it becomes science fiction, then it becomes pure horror. And I don't want to give it away, I really don't, but what other people have said who've seen the film is they were not expecting the story to go in the direction it went into, in a good way. And this every single time. So it's a testament to the writer, Julia Capra.
Mm-hmm.
And Julia, because of the success of this, and also we have a comic book tie-in, which we just completed, which expands the story into a second parallel universe.
Cool.
Yeah, it's right now my team, my artist Dave Beatty. He's draws for DC and Marvel Comics, and Eric Alexander, who's the editor, and Al Sparrow, the letterer, and Brian Miller, who's the colorist. They're right now at Tucson Comic Con. They have a table, and we just got the printed version yesterday, and we're going to have a panel. When I say we, I can't be there because I'm in Kansas, but they're going to have a panel at 1:30 p.m., and this is occupants-related, if you will. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be there while I'm in Kansas representing the film, you know, in Overland Park. So we have the comic book tie-in. And because of the success of that and the film, and it's just won an award in Houston at the Days for Horror Film Festival, won 7 awards, including for my 2 actors, and I was very happy about that because I wanted them to win something. So they got Best Actor, Best Actress, and because it's a horror film, she got, Brianna got Best Scream Queen.
Oh, cool.
So, and the, my longtime filmmaking partner, Emil Harris, he got an award for best editing, and my friend Sean Fahimian, who's, you know, done all the sound design on all my films since Girl with Gun, which is the short film that we did, like, it was a very successful short film we did 10 years ago, got into San Diego Comic-Con, but that one, he won, finally, best sound, Sean Fahimian, and, you know, it's just, because of the success, we won at Shriekfest. I mean, that was a really big one for us to win the Best Sci-Fi Feature Award. I mean, that one really opened a lot of the doors. But because of all this, Howard, the producer, greenlit Occupants 2.
Oh, wow.
So,
sequel.
Yes, she's writing Occupants 2 right now. And Julia and I, we've been going to all these Comic-Cons. We've been geeking out, if you will. And I love it because, you know, I mean, these Comic-Cons, they've treated us so well. We were just, as I mentioned, Stan Lee's Los Angeles Comic-Con. She was there. So was Brianna. We're at Florida SuperCon. Bob Picardo was there, too. You know, San Diego Comic-Con, which was, that was something. I mean, that was like the big enchilada, if you will.
Right.
But even Phoenix Comic-Con, where we won our first award, which was a second place prize for Best of the Festival. And that was back in June. So, you know, Julia's been at a majority of these events, and we've just been having fun, you know? It's fun. It's fun. You know, we spent 2 years of our lives working on this film, and, you know, I guess this is just something where we're just, you know, going along and just enjoying it as, you know, because it's going to end at some point, right?
Right.
So we're just going along, and we just hope that the momentum carries over into the second film, and hopefully even more, because, you know, we're dealing with parallel universes. So why have just one parallel universe?
No, it's supposed to be a multiverse out there. So not
yes,
just parallel,
exactly,
infinite,
exactly the multiverse series, exactly the direction we're going into.
So you could just keep going till you get tired of it, basically, for that particular.
Yeah.
So I noticed a number of your films are in the horror genre. What, as a director or filmmaker, draws you to the horror genre?
Well, I guess it's Hitchcock. You know, I like dichotomy. I'm half Japanese and half white, and I've lived in both countries.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand culture clash, and you know, I definitely can feel, like, conflicted at times, if you will. So, you know, I like it when, you know, a film deals with duality in whatever genre. I mean, it could be like the character of Batman, you know, very dualistic there, you know, half good and half evil. He just happens to be a little bit more good, right?
So that's,
and then,
like,
his counterpart.
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde project, too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so, you know, this film, Occupants, it deals with a real couple that's very nice and then a parallel couple that's really dark.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still the same people. And so it's very, what draws me to horror, I guess, it's the psychological aspect of it. So I like psychological horror.
Right.
You know, whether it's like, you know, Insidious or The Ring or Ringu in the Japanese version. You know, it's something more psychological. Yeah, the horror elements are there and, you know, and whatnot. But at the same time, it's about, I guess, thinking, you know, and just just, I guess, exploring that duality, as I was mentioning before. So that's what I like about it.
That makes a good horror film, in your opinion. That's what you like. Yeah.
Well, for me, I mean, it's like film noir. If you know film noir, it's the style with shadows. I love the use of shadows. You know, Hitchcock did a beautiful job, like in Psycho. You know,
chocolate syrup.
Yeah, so, you know, I explore, you know, duality through all these methods. And Occupants was just the perfect vehicle to do that. So I want people to question, you know, oh my gosh, you know, I'm a good person, but my counterpart's a psychopath. Does that make me a psychopath? Because it's genetically still me. So it's like that. And that's what I like about the horror genre.
That's interesting, because it seems like we went through this phase of, you know, you go through this phase of slasher films and blood and gore, and then it goes into this psychological thing, and then it's paranormal. It's been interesting how the horror genre kind of goes through these different phases, and like what's sort of in, maybe that's for mainstream movies.
Well, I've often thought to myself on the parallel universe thing that Russ is talking about, out there is an evil version of Space Boy. And, you know,
but how we know, you've already got the evil, goatee. The goatee, you know, you've already got the mirror look now.
Well, you know, it can be confusing. Maybe there's the good, you know, but looking bad version of Space Boy in this universe, and it's quite the opposite, because, you know, you've seen me when I've shaved. Yeah, so
yeah,
anyway.
That's got it. It's got to be opposite mirror with its unshaven.
But it makes for a great story. Wouldn't you agree, Russ? I mean, what you're aiming for is this, you know, hey, I'm good here, but over there it's like I'm the serial killer, you know, so.
Well, just in your defense, the bearded actor in Occupants is the good Michael, the good Neil Curtis, and then the clean-shaven one is the evil one. So,
well, I'm sure Sir Lana will detest for that. Is that when I'm shaving, there's just something not right.
Yeah, that's it's just yeah. We won't go into that. But so you like the some of the more black and white, maybe film noir, as noir is more inspiring for you, or when it comes to horror, or movies in general, like you said, Hitchcock?
Well, movies in general. In general, I think it adds atmosphere.
So is there anything about modern cinema you don't like, or are you able to sit down and watch a mainstream movie, or do you go and pick it apart and criticize because you're actually a filmmaker yourself?
I don't like the fast-paced and heavy use of CGI in modern films. I think it's overdone. You know, I kind of miss the days of like matte paintings or models. I'm not saying you don't use CGI. Obviously, we did use CGI in Occupants, but you use it for to tell the story, not to be the story. And you know, I have a the problem with these modern films, and they're not bad. It's just it's too much.
You're thinking
too much for the eye.
More like Star Wars 3, 4, and 5 versus 1, 2, 3, and 7, maybe, as far as CGI?
Yeah, it's like, you know, I saw the latest Transformers film, and it was just too much for, visually, it was too much. I mean, I just couldn't take it all in, you know?
You get a lot of feedback on especially like Transformers, because it's so heavily CGI and in your face, and it's like listening to, you know, dubstep, and I'm sorry, you know, I get a little dyslexic here on the show, but forgive me.
No, we're going to make that a new music genre. I'm going to write that down.
But yeah, I know what you're talking about, and it's always nice to go back to watch something that, you know, like you were saying, you're using just CGI to, you know, not as a main focus, but as just as a tool to just to accent the story.
Yeah, Jurassic Park was a perfect example of that. And it still holds up after, what, 23 years? I mean, it's just, it was a perfect blend of CGI dinosaurs and animatronic dinosaurs. It just worked. It worked really well. But, like, the new Transformers film, it's just, it's too much, you know? I mean, it's like there's stuff everywhere. It's just too much, you know. That's just my opinion. Of course, maybe younger people, they'll be like, oh, that's perfect. That's exactly, you know. I mean, maybe it's like MTV might have started that trend where it's everything's so fast and fast-paced, mm-hmm. you know. Even Occupants, you know, I mean, we did go with the faster pace because I was targeting, you know, people like in their 20s, right. like around 20s, 20 years old. So, you know, we did that intentionally, too. So, you know, I had the editor cut it at a faster pace than I was originally comfortable with. But by doing that, it did set the tone for the film. So sometimes it can work. You just have to, I guess, do it smartly. I guess the other thing I lament is the music. You know, I grew up with John Williams. That's why I became a filmmaker. And John Williams, the use of leitmotifs, thematic development, I do that in my films. And I had my composer, Vasilis Malesis, create themes, which he then, you know, explored as the film progressed. So I'm very much in the style of that type of film music. But a lot of music now, it just sounds like noise. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no development. Like, I miss the days of James Horner or Jerry Goldsmith. Maybe I'm old school. I don't know.
No, I wouldn't say that's old
school. Jerry Goldsmith on, I mean, like Star Trek. And,
that is, yeah. I know, very great, timeless music that's produced.
It's more like classical.
I mean, Goldsmith, you know, did Star Trek, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he was incredible. I mean, the score to Star Trek The Motion Picture, it's a classic. It's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It's just so well done. I can't say the same for the rest of the film, but the music was great. I don't hate Star Trek The Motion Picture, but it could have been a lot better. Let's put it that way. But right. the music was spectacular.
It's safe to say you're a Star Trek fan?
I'm a big Star Trek fan. I'm also a Star Wars fan, but I'm a Star Trek fan.
But you did actually two scripts, one to TNG and one to DS9?
Yes, I did do that. I was like 16 or 15. I got rejected. And what was the name of the lady? Lolita Fatchell? Is that her name?
Yeah.
She was the one who was a liaison at Paramount at that time in the 90s. And this is when they were still accepting, up to two spec scripts. So, and she's like, yeah, keep it up, you know, thanks for submitting, et cetera, et cetera.
And we were mentioning earlier that today, it's 20 years today that they aired Trials and Tribulations on DS9. It just made it feel so old.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, and that was the 30th anniversary, wasn't it?
I guess I put it about 30th, yes.
And that was a great episode, how they blended the old footage with, at that time, was the new footage.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That was great. I love that. Oh, I miss those days when there were two Star Trek series on at the same time.
I know.
And then you get a Star Trek movie every 2 years.
We were married at the Star Trek Experience when it was still there.
Oh, the Star Trek Experience. Yeah, I remember the original one where it was the Next Generation bridge.
Yes,
that's what we were married on.
We were married on the
that's great.
B, or C. We were married on the Enterprise D.
I'm pretty sure it's the only reason he married me, because I was willing to do that.
Actually, I just asked her, I said, well, you know, as a joke, you know, to see what she would say, and she said, sure, let's go. And so off
we
to
had
Vegas,
a female Klingon at our ceremony,
and a Picard lookalike.
Picard lookalike married us, and because we were the last wedding of the day, because it was like 6 p.m., they let us just stay and run around the bridge and
take pictures,
and pretend to be the different act, you know, different, you know, people. And but it was that 4D ride, so to speak, where you just sit in the chairs and you get assimilated, and of course Picard was there too. You know, telling us to prepare to be assimilated, and my husband got assimilated in a spot he wasn't expecting.
Well, it's okay. I got assimilated quite a few Comic-Con for Occupants too, so I know the feeling. It's a great feeling.
But yeah, we love Trek. But anyway, I don't want to detract from your story, because that's why you're here. So go ahead.
I did have one question for you. So did you have Klingon blood wine or Romulan ale to celebrate?
We did eat in Quarks, but I think it was just regular Earth stuff.
She had triple tenders or something like that.
Yeah, and something like that.
But
God, it was so long ago.
The Vulcan lady came by. And then Dorian, the female, it was a female Andorian too. Mm-hmm. And she was interesting.
They did have one Ferengi there, but I didn't get his picture.
Yeah, he was kind of off to the off.
Our wedding anniversary was the 30th of last month, so
we pretty much had a great nerd fest at that place.
And now it's gone. I mean, thank goodness we did it when we did.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Well, happy anniversary, and yes, I do lament the fact that it's gone too.
Yeah,
I don't know why they had to do that, but I was going to ask you. I asked this with one of our other local directors that we talked to, Joe Grisafi, and I think I kind of already know the answer to this question. I recently read an article that some execs in Hollywood are beginning to feel threatened by Netflix. And they're worried that Netflix is going to create a monopoly by seizing a large share of the storytelling, and some of the creative freedoms could be compromised. I was going to ask you what your take on that, but then I'm thinking, I just read this Wired article that said the biggest players at Sundance Film Festival are Amazon and Netflix, which would mean that it's easier for you to get your projects probably on those formats. So I was going to get what your take is on that.
But before you do, we have to we have to take our top of the hour break. And it's only 3 minutes-ish long. So everybody, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with our guest, Russ Emmanuel, and he'll answer that wonderful question from Sir Lana. So stay right there.
It will.
You are listening to Spaceboy Universe. Now here are your hosts, Spaceboy and Sir Lana.
All right, we're back. Russ, I wanted to see what you thought about this concept, this quote, where the idea that streaming services like Netflix and Amazon can be the new art house circuit for independent films, they said, is nothing short of life-saving for artistic storytellers. What would be your opinion on that?
I think it has helped independent filmmakers like myself to be able to stream on platforms. Like, for instance, my first three feature films are on Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can now even watch films on your phone, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I meant these smartphones. I meant I do that all the time now. And I just saw a series by Netflix, a Netflix series called Stranger Things.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. We know it will.
And it's fantastic. It is fantastic. So, you know, Netflix is producing programs that are incredible. I meant they just did Luke Cage, Daredevil.
Yes.
Yeah, he's all over,
you know,
Luke
they're
Cage.
They're really good. Yeah, they're really, really good, I'm telling you. So Netflix, I admire them. I would very much love if maybe Occupants could get picked up with them, you know?
Maybe we have to do we'll have to do a campaign for you. Yeah, when you're ready to, like, hey, we're getting ready to try to push for the Netflix thing, we will make it happen for you.
Thank you. Thank you. No, but, yeah, as a filmmaker, I think it's an incredible tool. And I don't know why the bigger studios would feel threatened. I think they should embrace it.
Well, they,
you know,
it's clearly the world of cinema is changing because of technology, bringing us, you know, easy to
like for
like
example
download or
like for example, still in theaters, but you can still watch it on Amazon Prime or watch it on Amazon while it's still in theater or, you know, things like that. So technology has given us a point where, you know, we don't have to necessarily go to the theater anymore. And I guess the big companies are kind of threatened by that in the sense that, you know, we make our bread and butter, you know, doing this. I guess more the theater end, you know. But, you know, it's just it's so much convenient and easier for.
And as you said, Stranger Things, it was overlooked by many major networks like on cable, and because they wanted to tamper with the story, the script, the actors, and Netflix just said, "Hey, that's cool, go do that." And I think they largely left them alone, didn't tell them what to do or anything.
Yeah, and look, it's incredible. They got renewed for season two. I mean, look, well, there's I guess several points I can make. I mean, cinemas always been changing. I mean, at one point it was silent films, right?
Right.
And then talkies came along. And finally, I'm sure the silent film companies and the silent film actors were feeling threatened. But guess what? It transitioned, right? And then what happened? Then color came in, right? And suddenly, you know, you have DPs who only shoot in black and white or, you know, and they start feeling threatened. But, you know, times just change, and you just have to adjust. And then what? I guess VHS came out, and then DVDs, you know? Things just change. And I guess you just have to adapt.
So
you just go with the flow.
You're of the opinion that for your productions that you're involved in, you're fine with people accessing them wherever they can. You don't feel like they need to be seen on the big screen for any artistic reason or...
Well, you know, it is great to see on the big screen, and Occupants has been on the big screen. In fact, it will be at Kansas International Film Festival, too. So we did create what's called a digital cinema package, and we did screen it for Shriekfest at the Raleigh Studios, and it's fitting because I was bringing up old Hollywood. But that studio was founded in, I think, like 1923 by Charles Chaplin, Mary Pickford, and Douglas Fairbanks Jr.
Wow.
That's truly old Hollywood. And Raleigh Studios is across from Paramount Pictures. And Paramount Pictures is, you know, I think they were founded in 1919. They never moved. Other studios moved, like Universal, but they didn't. So that is true old Hollywood right there where it's screened. And it's screened in the Charles Chaplin Theater, and it looked beautiful. It sounded beautiful. So there is something to say about that, you know. I mean, I think it's filmmakers' dream to be able to see it you know, the way you intended. But at the same time, you want to be able to, you know, get the mass populace to see it, right? Mm-hmm. And the fact is, you know, not everybody's going to go to a movie theater. So in that sense, I'm very much for these other platforms. Like, you know, I mentioned before, I definitely use my phone to watch films or TV shows. It's just it's very convenient. You know, I have an older version, and it stores, what, 64 gigabytes? Mm-hmm. And that's nothing now. Right. But, you know, I could still download a movie and watch it on the plane, which I'm going to be doing, by the way. I did download a movie for research for the new film, Assassin's Apprentice, and I'm going to be watching it. So, you know, I think technology has definitely helped me with my career, the digital medium, reaching out on social media, you know, my composer, Vasilis Meleses, I worked with him while he was living in Spain. Mm-hmm. You know, I only met him like 15 months later at the Florida Supercon, where, you know, the film screened, I think it was July. And it's like, you know, you don't even have to meet people.
Right.
It's just amazing, technology. What technology can do. I mean, now you can, like, the visual effects people, Manikanda Sasyavalan and his team Screenhouse VFX and Mark Vincent Benefe, they live in Bangalore, India, and the Philippines. And, you know, they won an award also at the Days for Horror Film Festival, and the one in Houston, for best special effects. Now, again, I have not met them. And, you know, video files are much bigger than audio files.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
So, but the fact is, now you can send files bigger than 2 gigabytes through Hightail, or you use Dropbox, right? Or you do WeTransfer. WeTransfer is free, and it's up to 2 gigabytes. I mean, it's amazing what you could do now. And there's no way I could have done this 20 years ago.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. So, did you, when you were in school, were you still studying any of the traditional techniques of film, like actual film strip film?
Yes, and that was, I think, one of the last few years. Now it's all digital. So it was like 8mm. But now, you know, the terms are still there, bins and clips, or, you know, I guess some people still use film stock. But the fact is, though, it's just so much easier with digital. It's much cheaper. It's much easier. And trust me, you shoot on film. You have to still do a digital intermediate if you can have visual effects.
Right, right.
You just that's the only way to do it, you know, and then what you retransfer back to film. So you're already, it's like a third generation at that point. Mm-hmm. I mean, so it is what it is. You know, I love film and I love digital. I consider them two different mediums, you know, mm-hmm. and they're both used to tell a story. One just happens to be celluloid, the other is pixels.
Right.
I can imagine their pros and cons.
I imagine when you're doing the filming process and you're in digital, it makes it a lot easier to go back and see if you got a take, a good take, a bad take, so that you can actually maximize your budget in the sense of, okay, we do need to retake this, or no, actually, maybe we need to, this is good, so let's move on from that. So, you know, I can imagine digital would be a lot easier than it's been in the old ways.
Yeah, yes, and you could even cut it on set. Mm-hmm. When we did a shot for Occupants, and it's in spoiler, I guess spoiler alert mode right now, but let's just say the same actor interacted in the same shot. Mm-hmm. So, of course, it's not possible, right? So you have to kind of shoot it twice.
Right.
And in order to make sure that it worked, I had my computer and my editing program and my the editor of the comic book, Eric Kask, he was the behind-the-scenes videographer, and he shot Video Village, which is the monitor that, you know, myself
right.
and Alexandra Sanders, a script supervisor, we'd be sitting and staring at that thing, right? Anyway, he shot that. He shot the 4 takes of the actress and then doing, you know, I guess person A, and then 4 takes of the actress during person B. And then I combined it with my program, and voila, it worked. It worked so well, but I would not have known that if I couldn't do it in real time like that. So, you know, that's an example, you know. And With film, yeah, you have to develop it, and then, you know, it's just like you have to do reshoots. I mean, Occupants, we had a pickup day, you know. I mean, it does happen. But I think with digital, it makes it so much easier, and it's much more efficient.
Of course, it's probably easier to edit, and as I was saying to you during the break, I didn't know as a director if you've done actual editing digital, your digital footage.
Yes, I have.
So
yes.
I've learned that you can really, editing can help make or break a film. I mean, has your experiences been with editing where maybe you found something that went wrong in the project and you just kind of feel like beating your head against the wall, and how did you overcome it?
Yeah, you know, you think outside the box, and our editor, Emil Harris, I mean, he was brilliant for Occupants. That's why he won the award at Days for Horror Film Festival. He just has the pulse on the pacing. And there were some shots in the film where, you know, we had to zoom in on certain footage, but, you know, by zooming in, it kind of blurs everything, right?
Right.
Well, he had the brilliant idea of taking the actual still photography and using that as the enhancement. And it worked. It worked really well. But that was his idea. You know, I mean, he's the one who came up with these things. So, you know, I mean, it's like a team effort. You know, we all have good ideas, and we just work and we implement them, and, you know, we trying to make the best product possible. So, you know, I've edited myself, and I don't think I'm the best editor in the world. You know, I'd rather rely on, you know, other people. Now, about digital, you were mentioning one other thing that you could do with digital, like this new film, Assassin's Apprentice, right? It's very action-oriented. Well, when you do action, you want to get as much coverage as possible. Mm-hmm. So my DP, Ray Carwell, and I are discussing using two cameras, including one camera that's specializing in slow motion. And you have to be, you know, you have to think about these things, you know, how to shoot it. But by having two cameras, it definitely helps. So this is something that we're taking into account right now.
Cool.
And we could do it because it's digital. So, yeah, digital does help.
So what would you say makes a good collaboration on a film? Is it people that just share your vision or just well-qualified in their fields, or...?
It's a combination of both. Everybody has good ideas. Of course, I'm the head of the creative head of the project, but I value everybody's opinion, and then I will make a decision, you know, based on whatever the input is. That's always how I worked. Same thing with my actors. You know, I want the most natural performance, so I want them to bring their own experiences to the table, and that way, you know, hopefully on screen, then it looks very natural. And I mean, not just them, but everybody, all the crew, you know, makeup, wardrobe, production design, which is art department, you know, the DP, the camera, the gaffer, lighting, you know. And I also like a fun set so that, you know, everybody's happy, and then there's a rapport and camaraderie. And it makes for not just a fun experience, but I think it translates onto the screen because everybody had a good time. So everybody's working harder. Because they believe in the project, they believe in the team, and I think it can only help to make the film that much better. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's my MO.
Now, here's a more hard-hitting question. You know, looking at more mainstream things, you know, there's more gossip around, you know, big movie releases. Recently, we read that, I guess it's the current director that was going to direct the next Deadpool. They parted differences over creative differences. Have you ever been in a situation like that where you've had to leave a project because you just couldn't
get
on board?
Luckily, not yet. But you see, I tend to be very malleable because, you know, it has to be a collaboration. Otherwise, you know, you have to be able to just work with everybody. And so, you know, I seem to know how to tread that line. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's just my experience. And the other directors may be my way or the highway, you know. I'm just not like that. So, you know, I would think, okay, so I can't do that. So what else can I do? Then I would have, you know, come up with some more ideas. For instance, right now we're discussing having a, you know, Steadicam operator for 1 or 2 days, but that will affect my shot choices, right, with storyboarding. So I'm taking all this into account, you know, the realities of, you know, the amount of money we raised, and versus my wish list, right? So can I do a Trinity does her, you know, or kick in the air shot, right?
Right,
from The Matrix. And I'm like, no. So I cross that off. And then I think of something else that I can do. But something that's equally exciting, you know, but something that's more realistic in terms of the budget and the amount of time we have to shoot this film. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean, I guess. And because of that, I guess that's why... luckily, Howard hasn't kicked me in the shins and says, get out of here. So, thank you, Howard.
Go ahead. No, sorry, go ahead.
No. We have a great team for this new film, Assassin's Apprentice, just like we did for Occupants. And in fact, I'm bringing back a lot of the same crew from Occupants because we had such a great time working together. So,
I was going to say, I heard that James Cameron was a My Way or the Highway director, at least on The Terminator, he was.
I heard that his lead actors from The Abyss don't like him. You know, and there's other directors like Kubrick who would do, 1,000 takes?
Mm-hmm.
And still not be satisfied? I mean, everybody's different, you know.
I think Kubrick was way different.
Well, I was going to say, you know, Sirlana faces a lot of this with me in the sense that you know, I'm the kind of person, I have a vision, and I want to carry out that vision. Not to say I'm a James Cameron kind of person, but generally sometimes I need a Snickers. But what I'm trying to say is that, you know, those people have a vision, and they're, like, so laser-focused on trying to get what their vision is done. But then, you know, it's refreshing to hear people like yourself that, like, hey, man, we're all here to have a good time. We're going to make a great movie. Let's all get together kind of... you know, just let's go with the flow. You know, you can't do this. Well, let's see if we can do this.
What he's saying is, you don't have to deal with divas.
Well, no. Look, I take my job seriously, so of course, you know, I'm going to be serious too. Right. But that doesn't mean that, you know, you're going to have a set where, you know, it's like Big Brother is watching you in 1984. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. why not have a good time? You know, we're creating an art. As much as it's business, you're creating an art form too, mm-hmm. You know? You should enjoy it. So, you know, that's what I try to do.
Cool.
So, yeah, that's it.
Okay.
And, you know, I just hope people will like it, you know? I mean, that's my number one. I when Occupants first screened, I was very nervous. I didn't know what the reaction would be. I didn't think we'd win at Shriekfest. I really didn't think we'd win at all. I mean, we're up against really good films there.
Mm-hmm.
And when we, it was very surreal. When the film ended, people were, up, you know, clapping, like in an applause.
Oh, yeah?
But it wouldn't stop. And it was very enthusiastic applause. And it was so obvious. You know, sometimes, you know, you would just, in other films, you would just clap because you have to. I could feel it. They liked the film. They really liked the film. And then it you know, I mean, I'm happy, but at the same time, you know, when I see my own film, I just see flaws, right? So it's like I can't tell anymore. And so just to get into Shriekfest, that was amazing. I mean, to, you know, the festival director Denise Gossett, she's just incredible. But to actually win, that just blew my mind.
Where do you know where or when that will be released so people can see the Occupants, or is that too soon to know?
Well, right now, as to where you can see the film, just at the festival circuit right now, Kansas International Film Festival is tomorrow. There's a festival in Wisconsin on the 11th. You go to OccupantsTheMovie.com. That's Occupants, plural, S, OccupantsTheMovie.com. You'll see all this on there. But yeah, it will be at Louisville, Kentucky, at the Fright Night Film Festival, and then at the Hollywood Dreams Film Festival in Las Vegas, Nevada, in July. But at the same time, we did get distribution with our company, ITN Distribution, for both domestic and international. So he's right now the head of it. Stuart Olson is busy selling to the territories. So, you know, getting an award like that, Shriekfest, it really does help, you know, and that's one reason I'm really, really grateful that we were able to win, because, you know, it just ups our chances of, you know, making our money back, making a profit, making the sequel happen sooner than later, you know. I mean, then this new film, Assassin's Apprentice, I'm very sure it built on that momentum from Occupants and what's been happening with that film. And then, of course, to people like you two, you wonderful people at Spaceboy, you know, having me on here, I mean, you don't have to, and so you have my gratitude.
Oh, we so. Appreciate you coming on. So, you know, as we're, I guess, ending towards the end of our conversation here, is there anything else that you want to, like, point our audience to like, hey, look at this, or hey, come here, like a website or...
Or anything that you need crowdfunding for?
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you go to my production site, it's russem.com, R-U-S-S-E-M, M as in Mary.com. You can see all the previous films. You can see the Kickstarter page for The Assassin's Apprentice. If you want, let's say, a digital copy or a physical copy of the comic book, you can still get it. At you go to the aforementioned site, occupantsthemovie.com, and then you'll see a link on the bottom right corner for the Indiegogo comic book campaign, and you can click on that. Just be on the lookout for, when we get to hopefully Amazon Prime or Netflix, you know,
oh, yes.
For the platform.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's. I'm very, knock on wood, I'm very sure it's going to happen, because it did happen for my previous three films. And hopefully, it'll get into the other territories around the world. So, you know, I'm just hoping for the best and just going with the flow. And then in a couple hours, I'll be going to LAX to get on a flight to go to Kansas. And,
Sounds exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, good old red-eyed flight. Yes, I'm going to go to Chicago, wait for 51 minutes, and get on another flight to go to Overland Park, Kansas. So, yeah. I'm very grateful to the Kansas International Film Festival, because they're flying me out there. You know, I'm not paying anything.
That's really nice.
So, you know, it's like, you know, I'm really incredibly grateful to them, you know, for even offering to have me over there, so...
I think you'll probably do well at that festival.
Mm-hmm. I just want people to enjoy the film. That's all. So, and then I mentioned the digital cinema package. Well, they're going to be screening off of that, the one that we screened off at Shriekfest and the Downtown Los Angeles Film Festival. So it's the same DCP that I mailed to them, and they'll be screening that tomorrow, local time, 2:40 p.m. So anybody's around, please come on by. I'll be there, and feel free to ask me questions, say hi. I don't know, we'll grab a burger.
Hopefully you will come to Houston someday. Maybe you've got another film festival when you get time, and we'll definitely meet you there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll be your cheering
section. Would love
to
meet, yes. Would love to meet, yes.
Well, Russ, we appreciate you coming on. We know that you had limited time tonight, but we would like you to come back at some future time. And
if you got your next production ready.
Your production ready, and we will toot your horn for you here at Spaceboy Universe.
Thank you so much to both of you.
Yes.
I really, really appreciate it.
That's Russ Emanuel, everybody, and we'll be right back after this commercial break.